Welcome to Concurrent Session 2, titled Vote for Opportunities and Challenges. My name is Martin, and I'll be the chair of this session. We have two speakers for you today, Paul Swinhoe and Monique Somerville. Paul is a partner at Deloitte. He has been a consulting actuary for 20 years and specialised in life insurance and wealth management. He helps his clients plan for and address an uncertain future. His experience covers forecasting, pricing, risk management and valuation. In fact, the whole range of issues facing actuaries in the industry. I'm not lying. It's true. Monique is a client manager in the governance and regulatory consulting team within the advisory and assurance financial services practice. She has over 6 years' experience providing assurance and advisory services, more dramas, to the financial services industry. Her focus is in delivering regulatory consulting and advisory services. Her roles involve understanding and translating regulatory compliance requirements such as FOFA into practical outcomes for organisations and assessing how regulatory change can affect businesses' governance, compliance and risk management frameworks.
Hello everyone. So what I'll be speaking on today is just briefly on three topics on FOFA. So firstly, where we're currently at with the FOFA reforms, a summary of the key reforms and the implications of FOFA on different stakeholder groups. Paul will then follow on with a more detailed analysis of the impact of FOFA on products and pricing. So the key purpose of FOFA is to remove conflicted remuneration, protect clients and put their needs first ahead of their financial advisor. And whilst most organisations support the underlying objectives of FOFA to improve the quality of advice, financial planning communities and industry bodies continue to debate and express concern about the costs and complexity of implementing FOFA. So FOFA was initially announced in April 2010, and the consultation period was relatively short, with the draft legislation being released in two tranches in August and September 2011. And this resulted in significant commentary from industry. And the proposals then went through the House of Representatives just recently in March 2012. So what remains clear is that there still is uncertainty around FOFA, and there have been conflicting suggestions and recommendations in the reports from the Parliamentary Joint Committee and the Senate Economics Committee that have not really clarified matters. More clarity, definitions and guidance is still being sought, and key areas are still being debated, such as the opt-in rule, how to scale advice, taking into account the best interest duty, annual fee disclosures and the code of conduct requirements. So the industry now continues to debate these matters and looks to ASIC to draft guidelines in order to determine how to comply with the FOFA requirements. So on the timeline, we can see that the FOFA reforms have been a long time coming. These reforms are really the result of some of the big failures in financial services organisations in Australia, such as Westpoint, Opus Prime, Storm Financial and Timbercorp. Internationally, there have been similar issues stemming from a conflicted advice industry, such as the subprime mortgage crisis in the US. And the UK is also in the process of implementing the retail distribution review, which is very similar to FOFA in Australia. In Australia, a one-year grace period has been granted for voluntary adoption of FOFA, with the obligations becoming compulsory effective 1 July 2013. And that's only if the Senate approves the change in the date. So the next Senate date in Australia is 8th of May 2012, and the draft guidelines from ASIC are expected later this year as well. So the key FOFA reforms really fall into six main areas. Opt-in requires clients to confirm every 2 years the services they receive and the fees they will pay. A key change that was announced from the House of Representatives review was that ASIC now has the power to exempt an advisor who is bound by a code of conduct which is approved by ASIC from the requirement to renew their advice every 2 years. So we still don't know what that code of conduct will be from ASIC. An annual fee disclosure letter will also have to be provided to clients from their advisors. And these changes are really around increasing transparency to show clients the value that they receive from what they pay. There's also the statutory best interests fiduciary duty, which is really a legal requirement that the advisor must now be shown to act in the best interests of their clients and must have reasonable steps were taken and inquiries made in providing advice to each of their clients. So the ASIC powers have also been extended to ban licensees and planners. Scalable advice, which we're also calling single issue advice. This one is important, and what we'll see more and more is that clients will become more segmented by their advice needs, and this allows advisors and organisations to tailor their advice to suit their clients. So, for example, we are expecting to see a lot more segmentation of clients between a full comprehensive advice offering and a more simple or less complex offerings. And this will hopefully provide more cost-effective options for more people to access advice in the future. The next two are banning conflicted remuneration and volume-related payments. And these changes are making the industry more client-focused by removing those structural financial incentives that meant that some advisors would be acting in their own best interests rather than the clients. And lastly, around planner capability. And these reforms are really aimed at raising the bar to turn financial advice into a profession. And we've seen a lot of changes around advisor competency, process changes, training requirements, and also the remuneration structures for advisors. So there are many different perspectives on FOFA, and it's been quite a highly contentious and discussed topic in the media. So the slide here shows some of the perspectives from key industry groups. We can see the Association of Financial Advisors and the Financial Planning Committee are both lobbying to remove the retrospective fee disclosure requirements and the opt-in proposals. And the other three groups outlined there are all recommending FOFA, but they have slightly different suggestions for changes. And that's because the impact of FOFA does vary across different organisations depending on their place in the value chain and how their income will be affected. And all at the same time, ASIC is continuing to have an active focus on quality of advice and is conducting reviews on a regular basis. So the impact of FOFA does vary. So for vertically integrated groups, the main changes will be around planner remuneration models. Advice fees will cease after 2 years unless they're renegotiated under the opt-in requirements. Planners must give advice in the best interest of their clients. And all of this leads to increased compliance, administration, advice and training costs. However, vertically integrated groups are widely seen as being the winners out of FOFA at the expense of the unaligned dealer groups. But advisor remuneration will have to be redesigned, and planner competency, behaviour and training will also need to be reviewed. Asset managers will be impacted as commissions and volume bonuses paid to platforms cannot be passed on to influence advisors anymore. Asset managers will have to differentiate on performance, breadth of investment choice and service. And margins will be squeezed, which means that large, efficient or boutique or the better performing managers will win out over others. So asset managers will need to find a new competitive advantage and new distribution avenues. Profits will also change substantially for product manufacturers, administrators and platform providers, as they will not be able to pay commissions or volume-related payments and cannot attract advisors with commission and bonuses anymore. So they may lose clients and margins to dealer groups who are setting up their own products in response to FOFA. So they will need to change their platform pricing and to support new fee structures and also find new competitive advantages such as lowering costs or having a broader or different product offering. Dealer groups. So planner remuneration models will change for these groups. Revenue resulting from volume-based payments from platforms will cease, requiring business model redesign, and advice fees will cease after 2 years for those opt-in requirements. So dealer groups will need to redesign their advisor remuneration, competency, behaviour and training. Improved engagement with clients will also be essential for the opt-in requirement, and the ownership of the client relationship will be really important in understanding and delivering on the client needs. We are seeing a fair bit of merger activity in the dealer groups so they can achieve the scale benefits, and dealer groups may also launch new products to attract and retain customers. And lastly, just to touch on the industry super funds, so we will see a decreasing differentiation between the industry super funds and the retail wealth sector as the retail wealth sector is changing. But due to their size and nature of their investors, they do have an ability to provide more advice under scaled advice models. So we are expecting that the number of planners for industry super funds to increase, and they may build or buy advice businesses to bring them in-house. So they will have to develop a scaled advice model, and it will be important for them to understand their customer needs, their customer segments, and delivery methods available for the large number of members that they have. So lastly, what can be done now? So the first step of FOFA we see is really to have a look at, is your house in order, and look at the quality of advice currently on offer. It has been an ASIC focus area in recent times, and we think it is vital to go back and have a look right back to the basic level of what makes advice good for clients. And this can include a current state assessment of things around your current advisor recruitment strategies, vetting, accreditation, training rewards, and competency and capability. The way that advice is currently delivered and different tools and templates that are used, the documentation requirements, and also monitoring and supervision. So the next is understanding pricing and profitability impacts. So has strategic analysis been completed by the executive group and discussed at the board level? This is where the actuaries come in, and modelling is completed to understand the impacts of FOFA on different income levels and different product mixes and the way that different fee options can have an impact on profitability. Our next one is looking at and optimising the operating model. So consider how advice is given, how to generate leads and quickly adapt to win new clients. And it's around considering, you know, where do your customers fit and the organisations who best understand their customer base and how they want to be interacted with, such as online or through call centres, will be the ones that come out on top. And this is a key challenge in really understanding and being able to tailor your offering to meet your customer base. So with change, culture is important. And so with so many changes to cope with, how do organisations keep their planners engaged and motivated? And also, you know, what's the tone from the top for FOFA and how has this been communicated in the organisation? And lastly, project management. So has a FOFA project been planned, designed and different factors considered, such as how to implement the opt-in requirements, new training requirements, technology, processes, risk and compliance controls around FOFA, all these things to consider. So despite the remaining uncertainties, what we do know is that the competitive forces will be stronger, and all organisations only have until July 2013 to implement their strategy. I'll hand over to Paul now, who will dive further into some of the pricing and product considerations to consider. Thanks.
Well, firstly, I'd like to thank Monique for stepping in. When she came to work on Friday morning, she didn't know that she'd be delivering this presentation. Sarah Woodhouse, who is on the program, sends her apologies She was called away to an important client meeting that was, let's say, unavoidable. And Monique has stepped into the breach to deliver her presentation. So thank you for stepping in at short notice and for filling in so admirably. I want to go a bit further into the impact of FOFA along the value chain, and to start off by looking at how the existing fees flow. There may well be an initial fee, it's all in the picture in front of you, which is paid back in initial commission to the dealer group, and most or all of that flows on to the advisor. Additionally, the customer will be paying what may be one or two fees covering both the product and the asset fees. The asset fees go to the asset manager, and a shelf space fee may well come back, but that helps finance commission going to the dealer group and to the advisor. So from the client's point of view, they're paying fees out of the product and only out of the product, initial and ongoing. I see two ways that this can be working after FOFA. The client may be explicitly paying an advice fee, getting their checkbook out and paying the advisor, who will then pay some of that to whatever arrangement they have with the dealer group. And still they will be paying a product and asset fee through the product itself on an ongoing basis that will reward the investment manager. The alternative is that the advice fee may be in some way built into the product. So instead of getting their checkbook out, they will agree that a fee may be deducted from their product, usually tax efficient that way. And the advice fee will be returned, therefore, to the dealer group and through the dealer group to the advisor. And the asset fee, I think a little bit of that slide has been edited out, so you're still going to be having part of the fee being paid on to the asset manager. Let's have a look at that from the point of view of each element of the chain. So from the client, they're going to be explicitly asked to sign up to an advice fee. Previously they may have had the commission disclosed to them, but now they will be signing up to an advice fee. Some are doing that at the moment, but not everyone. It will either be paid directly or deducted from the product. The ASIC research shows that a lot of people are interested in single issue advice rather than comprehensive advice. And I think this is a big opportunity for customers to get what they want and for providers to be able to provide single issue advice. They don't necessarily want a complete needs analysis and comprehensive advice. This comes through the ASIC research quite clearly, and it's a challenge for the industry. How do you know that you're not taking on more risk by not dealing with everything that someone might want? But I think that single issue advice is an opportunity to give what customers want at a price they're prepared to pay rather than what they don't want, or more than they want at a price they're not prepared to pay. Monique has talked about opt-in and the alternatives to that. But overall, it's going to end up with, I guess, the market pressures. A lot of people are averse to paying fees. If there is less demand, then prices come down. That's simple economic models. So we're likely to see lower product and asset fees. So the clients are going to be paying less. The question is, how does that ripple along the value chain, and who is going to be getting less out of it? And how will each participant in that value chain be acting? And of course, the downside is that if advice is too expensive, even if it's valuable, it may be too expensive, and the downside will be that people miss out on getting that advice. I'll deal with the advisors and the dealer groups together. They're not going to be receiving commissions. They need to negotiate their fees for the advice, which may or may not be single-issued advice or comprehensive advice. They're not going to be incentivized by shelf space fees flowing back from the asset managers that they're recommending. So they will become I was going to say more indifferent to the asset managers. They'll become more selective to choose the asset managers that really provide what they want and unbiased by the shelf space fees. There may be higher compliance costs, so it's going to drive them into managing in a until they do something, lower income and higher cost world. Can they develop advice models that they're able to generate renewal earnings out of? Can they improve their lead generation so that cost of sale is lower? The product providers and the platforms are in the middle of this, so I think they're in a very interesting position. They're going to stop paying commissions. They're going to stop receiving shelf space fees, though they may not have stuck very much on their way through. But their negotiations with asset managers may well be able to get some volume discounts. That's not banned by FOFA. And rebates on their fees, or asset managers will be forced to meet the market and reduce their fees in any event. Prima facie, because commission loadings are coming out of the fees, then their product fees will reduce. But will they reduce dollar for dollar for the commission? That is going to depend on their pricing, their strength in the market, their ability to hang on to fees and convince the market that their product is worthwhile at the price they're offering. They will likely need to develop the products that will be able to accommodate the advice fees within the product so that they can provide service to the advisors that enables them to implement the advice model that the advisors wish to have. And so there will be some product design there to be able to capture those fees and to pay them back to the advisors. And there's the question of is the product range right now? Advisors are going to be satisfying a best interest test. You would want, as a platform and product provider, your advisors to be able to satisfy that within your platform. May make some changes, may not. So I'm seeing developing products to handle advice fees, but the biggest issue is the impact on volumes and margins. There are products out there that do this at the moment, frequently aimed at larger clients, and therefore if everybody is going through their products, then margins are going to be pushed down. So it's a question of where strategically and are you able to pitch your fees and prices so that you're optimising your profitability. Asset managers, I've really already talked about these, that with the removal of shelf space fees, they're not going to be able to influence the advisors through money. They've got to influence them through other ways, so there'll be competition on product range, competition, God forbid, on performance, and pressure downwards on their asset fees. It says question. That is one each. So don't think that when one question has been answered, then that is it. I hope that has sort of has stirred up some thoughts and you can share some of what your organisations are doing. John Brogdon recently said, Chief Executive of the Financial Services Council, that FOFA will revolutionise financial services. So let's hear it. Have you been revolutionised?
Thanks, Paul. Let's open up to some questions. Does anyone have a question?
Do you want to have a shot at answering your question? No. I think that, I guess, certainly the ASIC surveys on what customers are looking for had a significant percentage who said the most that they would be prepared to pay for advice was nothing. They'll probably get what they're prepared to pay. Going deeper into it, I think single-issue advice is likely to be what many people will need until they get close to retirement. They may want to know what is a reasonable fund to choose. They may want to know how much should I be contributing? What do I do to contribute more? And don't want a full comprehensive plan. And therefore, people who can provide answers to those questions may well be able to do so at a price that people are prepared to pay. May not need to do it face-to-face, may be able to do it over the telephone, may even be able to do it online. So I think people will be needing to think creatively as to how to reach those people. And those people will change over their lifetime. When they do get closer to retirement, they will appreciate the value of advice more and may change to being prepared to pay for some, because it is so important to them.
I think that is one of the uncertainties around the scaled advice and how organisations will determine and segment the customers and provide them with the best interest obligation, but at the same time, only having a single issue offering. So I think that's one of definitely the practical challenges of the scaled advice topic of FOFA, but so I'm not sure if I necessarily know how it's going to be addressed, but I'd be interested in maybe hearing from the rest of the floor how your organisations might be tackling that one as well.
David Morris. Do you foresee any sort of massive changes in ownership structure? Because we already have asset managers that own platforms, and I suspect dealer groups and dealer groups that own platforms, and it seems to me there would be changes given how we might potentially slice up what the customer's paying up front end.
I think something like FOFA sends people off to think about their strategy and can they still develop a strategy that will work. If you're thinking about will there be more transactions such as Count going to CBA, that's an obvious one, and it would seem likely that there may well be others. I think that beyond that, it's not so obvious what the people will be doing.
Greg, I felt from Lime Super. It's a shame that people don't value advice. I know I am a financial advisor. One of my clients, I've been able to save him $70,000 a year in taxes just by restructuring his affairs. Now, that's an extreme example, but for the average client, it's a few thousand dollars a year, and it's a shame that people, especially as they near retirement or in retirement, they're not prepared to pay for that advice. But for those that are not, I think the answer lies in technology. And we saw Alex tweet from Nubank this morning, and he showed some of the things that can be done, that based on six simple questions, you can get a group down to 39 people across the entire population. And when you consider that, it's not that hard to build technology that says, based on somebody's situation, their age, their income, their risk tolerance, how much money they've got inside, outside, super, and so on, what the right strategy is going to be for them. And it's not going to be long before that can all be done, or probably already can, very easily online. I've got two questions for you. That was just a statement.
Statements are good.
So my two questions, which are connected. Firstly, with commissions being grandfathered for existing products that have already been sold, but now clients having the ability to buy a new product identical with the exception that it's cheaper because there's no longer commission built into it, what do you think the impact of that is going to be on customer attrition from existing products? And secondly, what do you think the impact is going to be on the number of advisors operating in the industry?
So what was it, number of advisors and, remind me the first part?
And the first part was customer attrition.
Customer attrition. It's certainly going to cause confusion because you're going to be operating two models for a while. You're going to be operating the old business and the new business. And you will need business rules for when do people you move from one to the other, and I think it's going to be difficult for them to be in both groups at the same time. There's no need for it to be attrition. It may be migration within your own organisation. Whether that is unprofitable or value destroying depends on your own pricing. But it's likely to be you're better off keeping them within your organisation than letting them go somewhere else. So to what extent should people be cannibalising their own customers before somebody else cannibalises them? But to the because it is stirring things up, there will be change, and therefore the people who get the operating models right, the business models right, will be on the winning side, and those who get them wrong will find their customers being migrated away from them. I mean, FOFA is just one part of all the changes that are going on, but with stronger super and everything in that, raises up some fascinating strategic questions as to where you should go with all of that, and who will be capturing the customers, and can you hang on to the 30-year-olds until they become valuable at in their 60s?
Yeah, I guess just to add to Paul's comments, there probably will be a little bit of a shift to begin with as people start, the awareness about the FOFA changes rolls out across the customer base. But I don't see that over time the attrition rates or the churn within the products would be any different to what it is now. In terms of the number of advisors, I think the jury's out on that one, and the financial planning groups are definitely advocating and think that there will be a big impact. There was a report issued by, I think, the Rice Warner Actuaries for the industry supergroup, which actually predicts that the advisor levels will stay consistent and that their incomes would still actually increase over time because they're expecting a lot more financial planners in industry super funds. And as wealth management in Australia continues to increase with superannuation contributions going up to 12% as well, they're still predicting that the financial advice industry in Australia will be still quite consistent with what it is now. So,
unfortunately, we've run out of time, so I'm sure you'll agree with me that today's presentation and discussion has been quite informative. So please join with me in thanking Paul and Monique.